Great afternoon, great weekend. Lots of good messages. As was stated last night, everybody's going to kind of step on each other a little bit here and there. A lot of things kind of blend together. But Jeff McGraw, the CrossFit Jeff, did a great job of just stomping all over what I'm going to talk about. So thank you, Jeff. So for some reason, Marshall thought it'd be a great idea to give me David, the person that had the most information out of anybody in this list. And I've spent the last 3 years going through Acts Sunday mornings in Lima, about once a month roughly. And we're about halfway through Acts in 3 years. And I get the person with the most information, and I have to try to cram that into 40 or so minutes. So we're going to be going rather quickly, but something I really enjoy is history. Going through the book of Acts and seeing the amount of detail that goes into everything that you just don't get unless you slow it down and you dig into the historical aspect of things. Like, you look at the geography, you see how far away everything was, you see how God was moving those chess pieces around where they needed to be at the perfect times. And what he did with David and how he put everything into place is incredible. What else is incredible is how many times in secular history that secular history doesn't recognize or see anybody until they have that proof. We've all been through most of Jay's books, and the first one in particular really digs into that. And when you look at David in secular history, there's really nothing. Up until 1993 or so, there was absolutely nothing about David and his reign. In 1993, there was what they call a stele, an inscription from Tel Dan that said the House of David. And that is it on David in secular history. But when we look at the scriptures, we can see everything that David was able to accomplish. We can see everything that he put in place. Because without David, there wouldn't have been a nation of Israel. As was brought out with Samuel, up until David, there was no real centralized government. The people would go to the judges, but there was no centralized government that would really direct the entire nation of Israel. And what David did after Saul, he really brought all of Israel together for a short time, but he brought them together, and they accomplished much. So let's flip over to 1 Samuel. There's been a lot of flipping last night and today, and we'll do a lot of flipping here, but it's mostly going to be flipping one page at a time. Because we're going to go through a brief timeline of David. Because like I said, I really enjoy history. And when you dig into David and his history, you can't fully understand it until you see when he accomplished everything he did. And the ages that he was when he did these things was incredible. So when we go to 1 Samuel, we see it picks up with Samuel, the close of Samuel, as we just heard about. It begins in at Saul. It goes a little bit of Jonathan. And then we start getting in to David in 1 Samuel chapter 16. So these are all rough estimate dates. I'm just going to kind of list out the timeline of David where major events happened. Nobody really knows because there's not that much that's been excavated or found yet. I'm sure that there's more things still buried out in the earth somewhere, but it just hasn't been found yet. These dates are estimate. They could swing anywhere, 5 years one way, 5 years the other. But it was roughly 1043 BC when Saul was anointed king, and 1035 was roughly when David was born. So going off a basis of 1035, it was right around 10 years later when Samuel came to anoint David. So David was out tending the sheep when he was somewhere between 10 and 12 years old. It was only 2 years later that David started playing music for Saul. He was proficient at music already at a very young age. And it was only a few years after that that David killed Goliath. So in roughly 1020, that's when David kills Goliath. We all know the story of David and Goliath. We're not going to dig into that much. It's been dug into a lot. The VeggieTales have great shows on it. Our kids watch it all the time. They know everything about David and Goliath. And I think that one of them was a cucumber or something else. But they know all about David and Goliath. It's something well known. But have we ever thought about what David had accomplished by the time he was 15? And when he goes out to Goliath, when he gets to the camp to see how his brothers are doing, he hears Goliath out there. He sees Goliath out there. And he's saying, why isn't anybody stopping this man? We are backed by God. Why are we afraid? Everybody's trying to shut him up and put him in his place, and he doesn't want to hear anything of it. And when they're trying to put him in his place, he says, why should we fear? I have already killed a lion. I have already killed a bear. At 15 years old, he had already killed a lion with his bare hands. He had already killed a bear with his bare hands at 15. Put that in perspective. We don't even let kids drive cars at 15 these days. And he'd already killed two wild animals. It was roughly 5 years after that, or 10 years after that, in 1010 BC, when David was made commander of Saul's army. Now, there's a lot more information going back into it that you can pick up in 1 Samuel 18. We're not going to get into it too much. Because if you really want to know David, read 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, the Chronicles. You can get all the information there. It'll take you a while. But he was made commander of an army at the age of 25 years old. He was put in charge of others to lead them into battle. Now, it wasn't just because he could lead them into battle. Saul thought he would put him in charge of these armies and David would end up dead. I wonder where David got that idea from with Uriah. It was also about that time that David was given Saul's daughter, Michal. And as others have said, there's going to be many butchered names. But that also was done to try to appease him. Not because Saul liked David. Saul feared David. Saul knew that when his time was up, David's time was going to come. And Saul wanted to prolong his rule. Saul didn't want David to become king because Saul wanted the power. And it was also about the same time that David and Jonathan became close. If we flip over to 1 Samuel 18... Might help if I go to 1 Samuel instead of 2. That wind blew my Bible to the wrong Samuel. 1 Samuel 18:1, it says, "Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself." Jonathan was quite a bit older than David was, but age didn't matter to them. Their souls were knit together. They were close the same way the church should be close today, knit together, helping each other along the way, looking out for each other, being there for each other. Now, as we continue on in 1 Samuel, we see a lot more information when Saul and David really start, Saul really starts going after David. 1 Samuel 21 says, we see that Saul threatens David, and David flees to Gath. Now, Gath to throw a little geography in here, Gath was a hometown of Goliath. So think of that. David, when he was 15, stands up to this 9-foot-tall giant, kills him with a sling, and then flees to that guy's hometown. Don't you think they all know about David when he does that? Well, guess what they did? And in order to be taken in as a refugee, he acts like a madman. All of this information, all of these details of David's life, you can see as we'll continue on, there's peaks and valleys in David's life. Peaks and valleys. He's doing great things, and then he makes dumb mistakes. And then he does great things, and then he makes dumb mistakes. And it goes on throughout his entire life, over and over and over and over. We'll get to that a little bit later. Now, in 1 Samuel chapter 24, we see that David has an opportunity to kill Saul. Saul's been trying to kill David. David has a few opportunities to kill Saul, but he doesn't take it. Because he's not going to raise his hand against God's anointed. No matter how many wrongs Saul made, no matter how many times Saul tried to kill David, David was not going to raise his hand against God's anointed. And we can see what David does to the person that does later. Because who God anoints, nobody should take down except for God. When that happened, it was about 1005 BC, and David was about 30 years old. Now, 5 years later, in 1000 BC, roughly, that's when Samuel dies. That's also about the time that David marries Abigail and destroyed the Amalekites. Now, David was already married to Saul's daughter. When he fled, Saul's daughter stayed behind, so David takes on another wife. And about 7 years after that, in 993, David was roughly 42 years old. In 2 Samuel chapter 2, David was anointed king in Hebron. 10 years after that, 982 BC, David sees Bathsheba. 2 Samuel chapter 11, let's flip over there. If David was doing what he was supposed to do, he would have never seen her. Second Samuel chapter 11, verse number 1. It says, "Then it happened in the spring, at the time when the kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all of Israel. And they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David stayed in Jerusalem." David stayed in Jerusalem. He should not have stayed in Jerusalem. Kings back then are not like kings and rulers today. Kings and rulers today hide in their big white houses and their palaces and their castles. Kings back then went out with their armies and they led. Jeff brought up earlier Lord of the Rings. Great, great movie. Lots of similarities to the scripture. J.R.R. Tolkien, he was a great writer. And when you watch those movies or read those books, you can see a lot of similarities to Christ when it comes to Gandalf. But one of the aspects there that Jeff brought up is he likes the battles, but he likes the speeches better. At the very end of that movie, the third 3.5-hour movie, in Return of the King, we see Aragorn going to the gates of Mordor, signifying the gates of hell. He's standing out there. He's giving that speech to his men where they know that they're going to go into battle and there's absolutely no way that they can beat the forces of Mordor. But he's going into that battle. He's telling his troops that they are not fighting for themselves. They're fighting for their friends that are inside and they're going to go fight anyway. David should not have stayed behind. David should have been with his troops. And if he would have been with his troops, he would have never seen Bathsheba. He would have never fell into that. But God has things set up in such a way that he's going to use David, even through all of his mistakes, to bring forth what he needs brought forth. And about 978, 2 years after that, I wonder where Amon gets the idea to take what he likes. Isn't that what David did with Bathsheba? Saw Bathsheba, he took what he liked trying to kill her husband, and his son follows in his father's footsteps and takes Tamar. And it was about that time that Absalom, one of David's other sons, tries to usurp David and take the throne from him. We can see these mistakes that David makes throughout his life, and people are watching. His sons are watching him. His sons make the same mistakes. It's the same way with us and our sons. They watch us. They watch every move we make. Even when we think they're not seeing us, they're seeing us. They're going to pick up on all of our habits, good and bad. No matter what they are, our kids are going to watch. They're going to follow. We are to set a good example for our children, especially our sons, to take after. 2 years after that, 976, David leaves Jerusalem because of Absalom. He's roughly 59 years old at this time. It was 2 years after that Absalom died. David was 61. It was 974 BC. 2 years after that, in 972, when David was 63, he returns to Jerusalem. And there's again war with the Philistines, and that's when David grows weary in battle. Even though he grows weary in battle, he led his troops into battle at 63 years old. Davey, how old are you, to put you on the spot? 69. Could you imagine leading men into battle 6 years ago? You don't think you could do that, but you can still outwork men half your age. Age is only a number. David, at 63 years old, is out there fighting giants. Again, leading his men like he should be. In roughly 963, there's another attempt by one of David's sons to usurp him and take the throne. And at that time is when Nathan instructs David to name Solomon the successor, to end these people trying to usurp the throne, to take over the throne, and name who the successor is going to be. And roughly 961, at the age of 74, David hands over the plans of the temple, and he dies, and Solomon becomes king. Very condensed version. There's a lot more detail, a lot more information there. But we can see David up and down, up and down, up and down. But what is David called? David is called a man after God's own heart. Why? Flip over to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. First Corinthians 9:24. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Now I know we've got some runners here, and I know we've got people here that have never run in their life except for maybe running from an animal. When I was in high school, I was a runner. I ran cross country and track starting as a freshman. But the only reason I joined cross country when I was a freshman in high school is because the cross country team was going to Tampa Bay, Florida. When I was a freshman, I was about 5'6", 95 pounds, little skinny, nothing. Too small to play football. High school I went to had a great football team, all my friends going out for football. But the cross country coach wanted me to go out for cross country. I was not a distance runner at that time, and I didn't want to be a distance runner, but I wanted to go to Florida when I was a freshman. So in cross country, we would have open runs every morning at 8 a.m. throughout the summer, every evening at 8 p.m. throughout the summer. The teams would meet up there and go run together to prepare for the season. I'd show up there sometimes, I'd walk. I put very little effort in when I was a freshman because I didn't care. But as the season went on and I started to run during practice instead of walk and stopped cutting through cornfields to make the distance shorter, I realized how much enjoyment could be had out of it. And I got hooked on it because of that, because of the team doing well, and because of hearing stories about how the coach would take the top 10 runners down to Hocking Hills and get two cabins and run for a week, 70 miles in a week. So I got hooked after that. That next summer, going into my sophomore year of high school, I would show up every morning at 8 a.m., go out and run 4 to 5 miles. Sometimes, once or twice a week, maybe I'd show up at night for those runs as well. That's when I really got hooked, and I started putting a lot in. Going into my junior and senior year, I showed up to every single morning run in the summer. I showed up to almost every single night run, and I'd run anywhere from 50 to 70 miles a week to prepare. I put a lot in. But guess what? When I put little in, when I was a freshman, I got little out. I was not a good runner. I was one of the worst on the team, and my 5K time barely broke 21 minutes. I'd love to run that today. I can barely make it 2 miles today. But back then, I was one of the worst runners on the team. By the time I got to be a senior, I ran a 17:06 in a 5K. I was the number two runner on the team, and I ran at state cross country meet twice. When you put a lot of effort in, you get a lot out. When you put little effort in, you get little out. It's as simple as that. What kind of effort are we putting in? When we look at David's life, we can see the effort that he put in. And we can see how that effort grew over his life, too. He held a few different roles throughout his life. He started off his life as a shepherd. That's a lot of effort taking care of sheep, but not too much responsibility. But the reason he had that role is to build him up so he could take on what was coming next. Before he was anointed by Samuel, he had no idea what was coming for his life. He was the youngest of his father's house. He was small. He wasn't this big, tough guy that people would fear when he was a young boy. He wasn't even a big, tough guy when he was 15 years old. But when he was 15 years old and he killed Goliath, he became a warrior. He took on his next role. He took that step to the next level. That helped to build his confidence. It helped to build his knowledge and understanding. And it helped him to be able to kill thousands. And eventually he took on the role as king. If he didn't start off as a shepherd, move into a warrior, and then become a king, he wouldn't have had the progression that he had. He had to put in effort each step along the way, but he kept putting in more effort and more effort and more effort, because if he didn't, he would have never succeeded. He would have never risen up like God had him rise up. We can see throughout David's life that he was a trusting, brave leader, that he was just, loyal, and faithful. But we can also see that he was lustful. He was selfish, and he did not always do what God wanted him to do. But there are some constants in David's life. He kept going. He never stopped. He never gave up. He kept going, kept taking one step after another. You know, my cross-country coach, he would always say that running is 90% mental, 10% physical, because you have the battle in your mind. After you take the first 15 or 20 steps when you're out of shape, your mind starts telling you to stop. You got to win that battle in your mind before you can win the battle of the race. It's so easy when you're out in the middle of a 4 to 8 mile run to get in the middle of it, to start getting a cramp, to just say, I got to walk. But guess what happens when you're in the middle of a long-distance run and you start walking? It's incredibly difficult to start up again. Even if you slow down to barely a walking pace, if you're still jogging along, it's much easier to pick that pace back up than it is to stop, walk, and start again. When that momentum is going in the right direction, it's easier to keep that momentum going in the right direction. When that momentum stops, it is hard to get it going again. Let's flip over to 2 Samuel chapter 9. Second Samuel chapter 9, we'll pick it up in verse number 1. I'm going to read through the whole chapter here. It says, "Then David said, 'Is there yet anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?'" David had no need to show kindness to anybody of Saul's house. Even though him and Jonathan were knit together, he still didn't need to show any kindness. This is Saul, the first king of Israel that failed miserably, that was taken out and cut off. And if we think of this in a secular way, David already had his own sons trying to usurp him and take the throne. If he's going to keep Saul's line going, they have more claim to that throne secularly than David has, because their father or grandfather was the first king. But David's not worried about that. He wants to show kindness to the house of Saul because of Jonathan. It says, "Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David, and the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' And he said, 'I am your servant.' The king said, 'Is there not yet anyone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?' And Ziba said to the king, 'There is a son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet.' So the king said to him, 'Where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'Behold, he is in the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, and Lodabar.' Then King David sent and brought him to the house of, from the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar. Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and prostrated himself. And David said, 'Mephibosheth,' and he said, 'Here is your servant.' David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly.' Again he prostrated himself and said, 'What is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me?' Then the king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, 'All that has belonged to Saul and all into all his house I have given to your master's grandson. You and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him. And you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly.' Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, 'According to all that the Lord, the king commands his servant, so your servant will do.' So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in the house of Ziba were servants of Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate at the king's table regularly. Now he was lame in both feet." So David, who had no obligation to show anything good to the house of Saul, did so anyways. And not only that, but he brought in Jonathan's son, Saul's grandson, to sit and eat at his own table. David already saw what happens when sometimes you have people eat at your table. Sometimes they're going to see that power and they're going to try to take that power. David was not worried about that. He wanted to show kindness to Jonathan's son. Isn't that the kind of kindness that God shows to us? What state were we in when God showed us that kindness? Weren't we crippled? Weren't we at a place that we needed him? This is also to take into consideration that at this time, in this area, crippled people were looked at, down on as no better than an animal, and oftentimes were discarded at birth. Now, we know here that he wasn't crippled from birth, but that it happened when they fled, when he was roughly 5 years old. But back in the days of Sparta, which ruled from about this time, in 900 BC to 100, if they had a cripple born to them, they would take them to the cliff and throw them over, because they only wanted the strong. Does God work through the strong? God doesn't always work through the strong. He works through the weak. Just like Jeff brought out with Gideon. Gideon was the least of his father's household, but God worked with him because God saw the potential of him. If God only worked with the strongest, everybody might say of the world that they're only strong because that person's strong. But when God takes the weak and elevates them up to places of position, the world cannot have any excuse other than that it is by God's power. Flip over to 1 Samuel chapter 13. First Samuel 13:14. It says, "But now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept the Lord, what the Lord commanded you." As Jeff Hostetter brought out, that God is omnipotent. God is the ultimate father. As a father of four kids, I have a very good idea of what each of those four kids is going to decide to do in certain situations. It's not that they don't have their own free will, but I know how their mind works. I know how they think. I know what's most important to them. And I have a very good idea of what they're going to choose. God is the same way with his children. We have free will. But that doesn't take away from the fact that God knows the decisions that we're going to make because of who we are, because of what our personalities are. Did God not know that David was going to make the choices that he made? Did God not know that David was going to have his peaks and valleys in his life? Did God not know that David was going to make a lot of stupid decisions and choices? He absolutely knew what David was going to choose to do. But David was a God after man's own heart, and David was exactly who God needed. Because being a man after God's own heart does not mean that you make the right decision every single time. It means that you don't give up. It means that you keep going. No matter when other people fall along the wayside, you keep going. No matter what happens to you, to others beside you, you keep going. And running, it's all about taking that next step, taking that next step, taking that next step. Because as soon as you give up, it's over. I graduated high school in 2004, and when our cross-country coach would take the team down to Hocking Hills, there's a 20K course down there. Jeff, if you ever want to go for a 20K run, for those of you that don't know the conversion, it's roughly 12 and a half miles. And Hocking Hills, very hilly. It's a course where if you're going to run that distance, you don't stop. You keep going. You got to keep taking that next step, or else you're not ever going to make it to the end. And for those that are really good at running, it's going to take them an hour plus to finish a 20-mile run, or a 12.5-mile run, 20K. Guys, we're not in a sprint. This is a marathon. we've got to be able to take that next step. We've got to be able to just keep going. Flip over to Romans chapter 8. Romans 8, 28 through 30. It says, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for the good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. For those He foreknew, He also predestined to become conformed to the image of His Son, so that He would be the firstborn among many brethren. And those whom He predestined, He also called. And those whom He called, He also justified. And those whom He justified, He also glorified." Guys, God knows the decisions that people are going to make because He is our heavenly Father. The same way as an earthly father knows the decisions that their kids are going to make, He knows the decisions that we're going to make. We have the free will to make those decisions. He just knows how our minds work. He knew that David was going to have those ups and downs, but He knew that David was going to keep going to the very end. He knew that David was going to remember Him. He knew that David was going to set up His eternal kingdom. God knows the same thing. God has put us all in the places that He needs us to be. We are all here for a reason. We are all connected to each other for a reason. Our sons are here for a reason. No matter what happens, no matter the decisions that others make, no matter the decisions that we make, we just have to keep going. We have to keep pushing through. We have to be a man after God's own heart to see the big picture, to see things that we may not see yet. David had no idea that he would become king when he was out with the sheep. We have no idea what's in store for us. 20 years ago when I was in high school, I'd get the shakes when I get up to speak. Hated public speaking. Absolutely hated it. Never really wanted to teach, never really wanted to do any of that, but Jeremy Wilson really kind of kicked me in the behind and got me up talking. Guess what? The more you do it, the easier it gets. And the more you go out and talk to people about God, the easier it gets. Yep. The more you go out and do things, the easier it gets. The older you get in life, the more you keep on going in Christianity, the easier it gets. There were things that I first worried about when I became a Christian 12 or so years ago, aren't even a thought anymore. It's by the grace of God that I've been able to overcome those things, not by my power, but by His. Because when we focus on God, the same way that Moses saw the trailing end of His glory, we will be transformed into that same image. When we continually look at God, when we are continually transformed, when we continually renew that mind, when we have that heart of God, when we have the same heart of David, we're able to keep going. We're able to push through anything that Satan tries to throw at us. Because he's going to throw a lot at us. Over and over and over and over. And he's going to throw a lot at our sons and our daughters. We need to set that example for them by keep going.